A couple hundred years ago, the only thing you had to worry about was a hangover.
You're telling me you're an investigator?
More or less.
Today, because of your curse thingy, you can't sleep with anyone.
We're not a team. I'm your boss.
Or else you might feel a moment of true happiness.
You got a real addiction to the brooding part of life.
Lose your soul.
Except for the bulk of it, where I was nearly tortured to death.
Become evil again.
You're a demon hunter.
Rude demon hunter.
And kill everyone.
It's fucking fantastic.
I love that sound.
Thanks, Cornelia. I always appreciate your perspective.
Welcome to Ale with Angel. I'm Josh.
I'm Rex.
And today we're going to talk about an episode of Angel that happened on Angel. It's called Provider, Season 3, Episode 12 of Angel.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are still on the Angel kick.
Still on Angel. I know. If you're getting concerned, stop it. Don't.
It will be worth
it. It's going to be okay. It's coming along.
It will be worth it.
Don't get your panties in the twist. Or do, you know.
I mean, you know.
Do whatever
you want.
If
that's what you're into.
I'm not kink shaming.
Yeah.
No sorry, bab. Yep. Hey, Rex, did you know Alexis Denisov is American?
I can't think of who that is.
Wesley.
Oh.
So we went on this whole thing.
What?
Yeah, this whole thing last episode about, oh, is that how they say migraines in Britain? And it turns out,
really?
Yes, they do, but it's apparently an older generation thing. And also, he's not even fucking British. How did we not know this? I'm a little upset.
I'm appalled at us, actually.
But
how did they?
Thank you to one of our British listeners for informing us of that. Or
wow,
somebody informed us of that.
How? That? No, like, it. I'm astonished that we missed that. Like,
yeah,
that seems like something you just glean over the years.
Yeah,
you
we've
know?
Apparently only ever had one legitimately British actor, and it's Giles. Anthony Stewart Head.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, maybe there have been other bit role British actors.
Maybe like some of the fucking Watchers Council or something.
Yeah, there might have been another Brit in there, but who knows. But definitely not Spike.
Well,
definitely not Wesley.
You know what? Kudos to him, because I would have never fucking guessed.
Right? Same with Spike. These guys are just too fucking good.
There's a couple of moments with Spike.
Yeah, maybe.
Especially when he sings.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like,
which is weird, because people tend to sound more British when they sing.
Well, actually, I was having a conversation with my fiance about this, because we've been watching House, and, of course, Hugh Laurie plays House as British.
Who is British,
who
but
is
sounds
British.
Very American,
yes.
Yeah.
There's an episode where a character is having dreams, and one of the dreams, House sings.
Mm.
And the musical, of course, he does it great, because Hugh Laurie is good at far too much.
Yeah.
But you can profoundly hear the British in his voice when he's singing.
I believe it.
Like, it is unmistakable that he is British.
In an episode of House.
In an episode of House.
He sings.
Like, he sings.
Huh. And we were also just talking about, you were telling me of an episode where they try to bet who can keep a chicken the longest.
Yeah.
Without security finding out, and people keep going, "Bacock!" Which reminds me, you need to fuck a doodle do, Rex.
I do.
You do doodle do.
Yeah. Our list of executive producers are
you disgusting doodle do.
We got a new one, Willie Chalker. Welcome, Willie. You are in esteemed company.
Sure.
We like to think so.
Is that what you call yourself?
No.
Oh.
Not necessarily.
Well, then I'll take it as a compliment.
Liam Neville, Monica Fonseca. Taez, T. Subba Spike, Audrey Two French Last Names, Bridget McCoy, Dead Serious, Ali B, Nathan Lancey, Dulcinea, Rachel Doodledoo, DTS, Cubby the Seal, Tabalicious, Sandra Craig, Jay Sommer, Catherine Parkinson, Karen Moon, Chris V-Man, Pat Like Turtle, Bad at Changing Their Name Heaps, Two Tone Don't Fucking Call Bradley Cooper Gnome.
Please change that back to something about a dildo already, K-Pro. Please.
Father Defenestrato, Methuen de Doodle Doo, Kelly MC, Jesse Rain, Alex from the Heart, and Carrie Phillips. Thank you so much. Without all of you, this show literally wouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
That list is getting long.
Ooh, it's...
That's about as long as my leg at this point.
It's so long, and it's so all up inside you, and you're loving it. Loving every thick minute of it. Baby. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. If you haven't reviewed us, you should get on that.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be left out. I know that you've got FOMO, and I am here to press on that FOMO and manipulate it unabashedly in my own benefit. Yeah. So do that. It's really the best way that you can help us out. We're absolutely still doing the hoodie giveaway.
Yep.
We will send you a hoodie randomly chosen out of the hat of the 75 people that have reviewed us once we get to 75 reviews. Oh, yeah.
Yes. We're at 69 right now.
Nice.
Well, I think that means it's time for a mom synopsis.
Joshua, what are you doing, Joshua? Oh, just trying to get ahead in life, you know? Oh, that's wonderful, Joshua. And about damned time. I've been pushing you to work all day, every day of your life, because that's all that my parents ever talked about, because that's what happens when you're fully indoctrinated into capitalism. It makes me a very interesting person. Yeah. Super relatable, Mom. Thanks. Man, it really is hard to get ahead these days, you know? I mean, people are so precious about their bodily autonomy. I know, right? It's like these younger generations are so entitled. The parents can't hardly control whether they're getting tattoos or having sex or being forced to give birth to their uncle's baby. I keep telling them, just find a man and he'll take care of you. Sure, right. Because that worked out so well for you. What I mean, you know, is I'm trying to avoid the dark web if I can, but getting ahead is like, it's not really legal and something people are usually willing to, it's not something people are usually willing to just hand over. Oh, sure. Everybody wants a handout these days. Just take, never give. Nobody ever gives things to me for free anymore. I ask nicely, I manipulate, and it's like they see right through me or something. I couldn't agree more. All I want to do is cut off a young girl's head and sew it to my ancient master's shoulders so he can reign 1,000 years more. What the fuck is wrong with people? Am I right? Joshua. Yes, mother. Nothing. Because today on Angel... Angel is getting overly obsessed with providing for his child financially, and so he puts out... Did that take too long to get to the punchline? No. With providing for his child financially, and so he puts out a bunch of advertisements for Angel Investigations. They take on 3 cases all at once. A man wants Angel to clear out a nest of extortionist vampires, a woman wants Gunn to take care of her zombie stalker boyfriend, and some demons want Fred to solve a puzzle for their prince as a gift. The dude that hired Angel welches on him completely, but it was a noble cause, it turns out, so Angel helps him anyway. The woman ends up getting back together with her dead boyfriend, and the puzzle Fred is solving ends up being some sort of qualifying factor that makes Fred's head worthy of being the prince's new head. Luckily, Cordy has a vision about it and calls Wesley, Gunn, and Angel and leaves them voicemails. So when she goes to give them back the money in hopes that they'll peacefully stop doing what they're doing, Wesley and Gunn and Angel drop in and decapitate the prince anyway and kill the rest of them off just for funsies. Then they keep the money and don't buy a boat with it. Meanwhile, Holtz tortures his new recruit into helping him recruit more new recruits. Oh, and Angel learns a lesson about keeping his mind off of the real mission of helping the helpless or some shit. The end.
Ladies, gentlemen, spiny-headed looking creatures.
Soon as the sun goes down, vampire. Competition is a beautiful thing.
So cold open.
Cold open on the hotel. Angel is gathering and counting coins for the Connor Fund. Apparently there was some cold, hard cash in the sofa.
Yeah, Angel's being an insufferable freak about money, but And he's got the whole gang hopping around trying to put out advertisements about Angel Investigations, flyers, yellow pages, websites.
I mean, to be fair, we've talked a little bit before that they really ought to, like, you know,
press a little harder.
Yeah, get paid for the work they're doing.
I'm not sure how the fuck they've been surviving as long as they have.
Exactly.
But he's literally gone so far as he's scraping like $1.87 of loose change out of the furniture to store in a piggy bank. I mean, like, the piggy bank itself costs more than $1.87.
The part I think is fucking hilarious is he takes the piggy bank and puts the piggy bank in a safe.
In an actual safe, yeah. But it's all for Connor. He's trying to provide for Connor. He joins Cordy in baby talking at Connor, and they end up pseudo arguing with each other via baby talk. It's really stupid, and I hated it.
Yeah, I didn't like it too much either.
But Cordy makes the point that they've always gotten by before, and she's worried he's going to lose sight of the mission, help the helpless, if you remember that from the first season.
I just want to say that the moment where she is like, look, our mission is to go by what the powers want us to do. Major kudos for that, because in the first season, the roles were reversed.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was all about the money.
She was money, 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 and he was mission, 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 yeah. Well, I'm afraid what they're going to lose sight of is the fact that this baby is a weird anomaly that's impossible and being hunted by the entire demon underground.
Yeah.
Or at least that they'll spend too many episodes with this overbearing dad shit before they get back to resolving that plot point.
I'm thinking this will be the last one of it. I really think so.
Oh, you really are an optimist. I remember the last time we were in Angel Doldrums, and you said that like every episode for a season.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's the last episode, too. Yeah. Me too, buddy. Definitely.
Don't patronize me.
I'm not giving you any money. I did buy you a sandwich, though.
You did buy me a sandwich.
Yeah.
I got a whole sandwich.
And I got a Snickers wrapper waiting for you, too.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, enter Gunn and Wes, who have put out 6,000 flyers all around L.A. Man, remember the day when flyers would actually get you business?
Only 6,000, huh?
That's still pretty good.
We didn't even get a flyer montage.
There's kind of a lot in this episode, though. Like,
yeah. I'm just saying.
They would have had to cut out a whole fucking storyline.
They could have made a whole fucking episode about just putting up flyers. Right. I want that episode. Where is my flyers episode?
I don't, guys. I don't want that episode.
Ugh. I don't even want anything to happen. I just want an entire episode. Was it Wesley or Gunn putting up flyers?
They were doing it together. And they paid people to help.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh. That is an expensive mistake.
Yeah.
Oops.
But they're like, oh.
I mean, what mistake? Because we haven't gotten there yet.
They're like, oh, the flyers are out and the website is live. And so all we got to do is wait. And they all are just staring at the phone waiting for it to ring.
Not ringing.
Cut to the city streets where it is raining. No hint that it was raining before this. But the guy running down the street finds the flyer to Angel Investigations, runs up to a payphone. He's going to call. He dials the number, and oops, it turns out it's a pizza place.
You know, it's a big city. It could be raining somewhere else in the city, but not raining here.
I don't think LA tends to work like that.
Okay.
I just imagine it doesn't, because it doesn't, I don't think it rains there very often.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I don't really either.
I've only been there, kind of been there once.
But yeah, it turns out the phone is a pizza place, and cut back to the hotel where Fred picks up the flyer and she's like, is this even our phone number?
Oopsie. Opening sequence. Credits. What?
We said the same thing.
Said the same thing.
You said sequence, I said credits.
You owe me a Coke. Meow, 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 meow. We're still at the Hyperion. Gunn is totally glaring at Fred. He's just undressing her with his eyes, and she's holding the baby.
He is uncomfortably staring.
Oh, yes.
Like, he's not watching her. He is fucking staring at her.
Oh, he is eye fucking the shit out of this poor girl. Thinking about all the dirty, nasty things he's going to do to her as soon as he acquires her explicit, enthusiastic consent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wesley returns. He put out another 6,000 flyers with the correct phone number.
Yeah, Wesley was looking at the baby
right
properly. You know, nothing weird about it. I mean, how fatherly of you, Wesley. Who's the real adult here? I mean, I don't know. Put them both together, and I think between Wesley and Gunn, you get one fully functional adult male. But we know Wesley's into Fred, too.
Right. Well, and there's a few times in this episode where it's hammered on home.
Yeah, they're competing. They're going into competing mode, and I'm quite sure Wesley ends up with her.
No comment.
Okay.
No, so they do exchange kind of an uncomfortable look. Because Wes, like, pointedly is like, you know, I'm actually talking about the baby. And Gunn's like, well, I'm talking about Fred.
The hot mama.
Yeah, he calls her a hot mama. But
even though she is in no way the baby's mother.
Right.
Mm.
But also, like, the way that Wes says, oh, I'm talking about the baby, you can very much tell that he was not. Because he says it as
you think?
Like, no, to me it sounds like a, you know, I'm actually talking about the baby. It's like, No, you're not.
I didn't get that at all, but I'm always open to alternative interpretations.
Just especially with the way the rest of the episode goes with these two and drooling over Fred.
Right. I mean, he can do two things at once. He's a smart guy. He can drool over Fred and think that the baby's cute.
That's valid.
But Angel tells Wesley after Wesley apologizes about the flyers that making money is their number one priority.
I found it interesting that Wes was apologizing to Angel about the flyers like that because he was doing it in a way that's like, wait, isn't Wesley the boss?
They even make mention of Wesley being the boss in this episode, except it's very obvious that the writers are trying to make us completely forget that that is the case.
Yeah, maybe.
Because this episode completely loses sight of that. Angel is just losing his shit over this and stomping around like he's the boss. But you know who's not the boss anymore, Angel?
You.
You.
Yeah. It's a little annoying.
It's very annoying.
Lauren shows up, goes a little bit on about drinking baby formula and Kahlua.
And Kahlua. Apparently it's not as bad as it sounds. I bet it is, actually.
Right.
That sounds horrible.
You know what? If you're adventurous, I'm curious, but not curious enough to try it myself. So if you're adventurous, dear listener, give it a shot.
Oh, thank God. And, I thought you were talking to me for a second.
No, no, no.
I was like, I'm not
you're
doing that.
You're lactose intolerant.
Oh, yeah. Is there real dairy in baby formula?
I think so.
I would imagine so. Like, that's specifically when you're supposed to have
exactly,
dairy.
Yeah. But if you're adventurous, dear listener, I'm very curious about whether or not Kahlua and baby formula could even work.
Yeah, let us know. Ew, I'm voting ew.
Let us know. Give us a call,
269-743-0783.
And send us a voicemail and let us know just how correct or wrong Lorne is.
You know, that might be why people can't tell us apart is because I always finish that phone number for you.
Maybe.
Like, seamlessly.
Yeah.
And I want to know if you could give us a call at 269-743-0783 and let us know if you knew that. Or did you just think that it was Rex saying the number? That's what I want to know.
No, to this day, I cannot remember that number.
I know.
You literally just said it, and I don't think I could repeat it.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. I know.
Fun fact, though, if you said the wrong number, I would know that you said the wrong number.
Hmm.
ADHD brains are weird, man.
I don't want to say the wrong number, because then I risk fucking up my perfect recall of that number.
Valid, very valid.
No,
Angel wants Lauren to pull in resources to find info on Holtz. You know, go talk to his contacts and so forth, so on.
Yeah, because that's their other number one priority, finding Holtz.
Yes.
Cordy clears her throat suggestively, and Angel corrects himself, helping the helpless and finding Holtz and making money are our three number one priorities.
Yeah.
And then the phones start to ring off the hook, and Angel masturbates himself furiously whilst they take the calls around him. Money, 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 he's chanting as he just drills one out.
I'd also like to point out that...
And now we know where that baby formula is coming from.
God.
I'm not sorry.
You should be sorry.
Wouldn't it just be blood coming from a vampire anyway?
I don't know.
It's not worth it.
I don't
about.
Know.
Not worth it. My bad.
We already have enough questions about this whole fucking debacle.
Yeah.
We don't need to get into that.
It's almost like vampires aren't really very possible. Or zombies.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Anyway, you were saying? You were going to say
something?
What
was I saying? Oh, right. As somebody who oftentimes will count chickens before they hatch, boy, Angel is on that fucking cart. The one that's way before the horse.
Oh, yeah.
And has all the chickens that he is counting.
Oh, yes. Takes one to know one, clearly. Yeah.
Like, he's just like, every single thing that happens, like, oh, that's a lot of money, and he's thinking it's in the bank already. And
guys,
no, that is not how that works.
Don't get me started on how much Rex puts the cart before the horse. He like puts them on an airplane first class to fucking
I am optimistic
Vegas.
To a fault.
And he's like, I'm gonna meet you there in a month after you've put all of our money on black and more than quadrupled.
Okay,
our
savings. I'm not that bad.
Oh, no, you're worse. I was going to go more, but you know what? We have an episode to do here.
Fuck you.
It's way worse than that. Literally.
I am a bit more realistic than that.
All right. If you say so.
I don't want to share my feelings. I don't want to open up. I want to find the guy that killed Tina. And I'm gonna look him in the eye.
Then what?
Then I'm gonna share my feelings.
Cut to Holtz.
Holtz's hideout. He's lecturing Justine about killing two vamps that he told her specifically not to kill. And she's like, well, fuck you. They're vampires. That's what you want. You want us to kill vampires. He's like, no, I want you to listen to me.
Yeah, he's like, no, don't do that. And she's like, but I wanna.
I like how he doesn't stab her in the hand in this scene. Like, once we zoom out from their conversation, we realize, no, her hand has been pinned to the table this whole time.
And there was a little hint because he says something about the blah, blah, blah at hand. And she's like, is that some kind of sick joke? And I was like, okay, there's something wrong with her hand.
Yeah.
I kind of expected her hand to be totally lobbed off.
Oh.
But it made a little more sense. So it's like, if you're going to expect people to be completely devoted to you and capable fighters, maybe don't cut their hands off.
From a story standpoint, I absolutely fucking love what Holtz does here.
Yeah.
Because so he has, the whole thing is he has put an awl into her hand and stabbed it into the table. It's through her hand. Her hand is pinned to the table.
It could have been an ice pick.
No, it's an awl.
I also know what awls look like.
I'm 100% positive it was an awl.
All right.
And he specifically tells her that he's going to leave and she has a choice. She could either remove it and go on her way or choose to leave it there until he gets back. And the whole plan is that he wants to essentially test how determined she is. Like, does she have the conviction to follow him? And honestly, this is kind of a brilliant way to do it. It's fucked up, mind you, but from the villain standpoint, it's kind of brilliant.
Yeah, from a psychologically manipulative standpoint, I couldn't tell if she's in some kind of cell or not. Is she capable of just walking away from this?
I don't think she's in a cell. I think she's just in his normal hideout. Because they do make a line of, like, her saying, you know, you could get lights or some shit in here.
And
along those lines.
Functional plumbing or indoor plumbing.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that answers one question we had from the very start.
Yes.
There is not. And there, in fact, needs to be at least a bucket somewhere.
There is, however, electricity because they had the computer and the computer
and
worked.
And the TVs. Yeah.
Why the fuck don't you just put up a couple of lights? You could get those fucking construction lights.
What is their light source? I mean, those
fire. There's braziers around.
That sounds way nicer than,
I mean,
fucking construction lights. Those are so bright.
Maybe. I guess it depends on how big of a space.
But also, if it seems like the fire would kind of, you know, suck up all the oxygen and be a bit smoky.
What is their air?
What's
circulation
their ventilation system?
Yeah.
Can we get some HVAC guys in on this?
Like, she is very sweaty in this scene. And, you know, maybe she's sweaty because she has her hand stabbed with an awl and stuck to the table. Sure, but also maybe she's sweaty because you're in an enclosed space with fires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, and more importantly, in an enclosed space with fires, and it's a desert. So I can't imagine you know.
That there's a lot of moisture in the air to begin with.
Exactly.
Yeah. Huh. A lot of questions here. A lot of questions. Yeah. I think that, okay, I wasn't sure exactly where they were going with this, but I like your interpretation of it, so I'm going to go with that.
Yeah.
I didn't have any better answers.
Right.
So.
And that's basically what he says. And, you know, he says if she keeps it in until he gets back, then they'll talk about what the future of their partnership is.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, when he gets back, if she's still there, he has a lot of good information about how fucking determined she is. And that, you know what? That's better than he's gotten from the other minions that he's dealt with.
I mean, even if she were to take the ice pick out, perform any amount of first aid on herself, and still wait around and be willing to work for him, I think that's more than enough determination.
But it's not just the determination. He's also testing whether or not she'll listen to him.
Mm.
And he chastised her for not listening to her, not listening to him in the first place.
Yeah.
Then says that I'm going to test your determination and resolve with this test. And then on top of that, he's also testing whether or not she's going to hear what he said about listening to him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he gets back and she's in that same position, it definitively tells him that she is going to follow him.
Lame. Too bad for her. Good for him, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess she's got nothing better to do.
I'm interested to see what they do with this character.
Right.
Like, I don't, and because I don't remember what they did with Justine.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of having a bit more background with a, not even the main villain, but a side villain.
I think it's interesting that she said she's doing this because feeling something is better than feeling nothing. And that's exactly why people get in the cycle of abusive relationships, which is exactly what this is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's definitely not healthy.
So,
but yeah.
Yeah, I think even from a metaphorical standpoint, this is a fairly well-written relationship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, kind of like Harley Quinn and Joker, except I don't know nearly as much about them.
I have qualms about that. That is not for this podcast.
Fair enough.
I disagree that Harley Quinn and Joker are good characters. I don't even.
Okay.
I have thoughts there. But
I know they're absolutely not a relationship that anybody should strive for.
No, unquestionably
but
no.
But are they engaging villains?
They are engaging villains. But I'm not going on that tangent. I'm
okay.
I am stopping myself this time.
And I don't consider myself in any way a Batman expert. So moving along.
I actually kind of am, because I actually have read from issue one of Detective Comics all the way through well into the 600s.
I know you're a huge Batman nerd.
Yeah.
So anyway, cut back to the Hyperion,
where business is booming.
Oh, yeah. The lobby's full of people and demons.
And demons.
Fred's onboarding some dude. Couldn't tell if he was a demon or not. Don't really care. Lauren's talking to some demons called the Nadra. And these creepy-ass fucking demons look like the bastard zombie children of King Arthur and the Cenobites.
Yeah, that's a good... Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very creepy.
Yeah.
Also, like, extra creepy because of the way they communicate.
The clicky-poppy noises.
Like, imagine being in a dark, like, dungeon room, and you're just hearing this clicky-poppy fucking conversation out of the shadows. That would be terrifying.
Well, you wouldn't necessarily know that it's a conversation, but
right.
Whether you do or not, it's still creepy.
Yeah, it's very creepy.
But Lauren speaks their language, and...
Mostly speaks kind their of language. Speaks She's a little rough.
He seems to translate fairly well.
Yes.
But, I mean, you can't... Not that you can tell based on his accent. His accent is fucking rough. Because they're making these, like, really fast and nuanced little clicky-poppy noises where he's literally just going... And I'm like, stop. I'm offended for them, Lorne. Dear God. I wanted them to make a joke about that, and they missed it.
Yeah. There's a few things
absolutely missed opportunity. But anyway, they want to hire Wesley because they read some article he did on DNA fusion comparisons in triped demon populations.
Yeah.
And Angel is very interested because they're offering lots of money.
Lots of money.
Everybody likes money.
And this is where we get the, like, the boss comment, too, because Lauren steps over to Angel and is like, yeah, they're here specifically for the big boss. And Angel's like, oh, okay, and starts to, like, step over.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, actually, they mean the literal boss, Wesley, because of a paper he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, you know, Angel does take that in stride. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. So they're keeping it canonical that Wesley's the boss, but then they kind of stepped back and said, but it's still a show about Angel, so we still kind of need to let him run things. Mm. So he's the backseat boss now.
Yeah.
Whatever.
There's a good amount of the idea that Wesley is giving orders that would already be followed had he said nothing.
Right. You know? Yeah. But Gunn takes a girl into the office to talk to her about her case, which is kind of personal.
Yes.
And Angel helps Cordelia by answering a phone call and needs a pen and paper immediately. So then we're back over to Gunn in the office talking to this girl who is very bad explaining that she's being stalked by her zombie boyfriend.
Yes. She specifically is like, she's being stalked by her ex. The police won't do anything. She's talked to the police, but they'll just think she's crazy because he's dead. It's like, maybe you should have led with that.
Just maybe. Just maybe.
Or maybe Gunn should have been like, okay, why are you here with us if it's just a stalker ex-boyfriend?
Well, because even if he wasn't a dead stalker, this is where I thought it was going to go. Before they went with the zombie storyline, I thought she was going to be like, well, the police won't help me. And it was just going to be like, oh, so we're just going to take a normal case because the police suck. I'm on board with that.
Yeah, I very much am too.
But that's not where it went at all.
We cut back over to Lauren and Wesley talking to the Nadra, and they specifically want Wesley to solve a puzzle. Just about the time when Wesley's like, ooh, yes, a puzzle. I can do a puzzle.
I have a quote of the day here, actually. Oh, okay. Wesley's talking about this internet article that he wrote, and he says, the internet article I'm currently writing posits a formula for the genome mapping of creatures who don't have genes. It's an exciting arena. And the quote of the day is Lauren's here. One I'm sure we can all download at I'll never know the love of a woman.com.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ha! Nerd shaming based on the amount of sex you may or may not have, which is simultaneously funny and toxic shit that I wish we would all just fucking stop doing already. Right. But when it's funny, it's funny.
I agree.
So there's actually a couple laugh out loud moments in this episode.
There's a couple. Not as many as I would have hoped for. But there are a couple.
There's never as many as we would hope for.
Well, yeah. But then Fred kind of interrupts the situation where she's just kind of enamored with their clothes because... The symbols and patterns that they have on their clothes are, you know, mathematical in nature and very fascinating, fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. And she explains what it is. And Wesley's like, no, I didn't notice that at all.
Oh, she says, Sure, these are puzzle people. You notice the designs on their tunics? Geometric shapes, each a prime number. If you count their edges, arranged in ascending order of the exponential accumulation. You know, she's all like up in the demon's space, like poking at his fucking tunic. It's like, Fred,
like, you don't know anything about these demons.
Don't poke at the scary Cenobite.
I have a question. So if the previous episode they had the big barrier, right? Did they actually make the place where you couldn't get harmed in it? Or like that demons couldn't harm people? Or was it just the barrier?
Yeah, they only had like a big force field around the the place.
I just couldn't remember that got taken down
that episode and never came back.
Because I know they called the three women who are all
the Furies.
Yeah, the Furies, that's it. They called them, but I couldn't remember if they had done both the barrier and the can't hurt people.
As far as I know, just the barrier. As far as I can remember, and that was two episodes ago.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, they're all just bleeding into each other again.
I know.
That's what happens when we just do one show for a while,
mm-hmm.
honestly. Anyway, Wesley has no fucking clue what the hell Fred is talking about. At this point, Gunn pulls Wes aside to help talk with the woman about the dead stalker. And then the camera pans back over to Angel, who quickly hands off Connor. Well,
not yet. Oh. The demons want to know why Fred was pointing at them.
Oh, right.
And Lauren has to translate before shit goes off the rails.
Yeah.
And turns out they liked her, but needed to leave suddenly to either go eat a cheese monkey or talk with their prince. Who knows for sure? Lauren.
Not Lauren.
Not with that shitty accent. but
they really should have made a joke about his bad accent.
They really should have. Missed opportunity, I'm telling you. But yeah, like you were saying, Gunn thinks he might need Wes on the case he's handling. He pulls him away. And then Angel fucks off and leaves the baby with Cordelia as if she's not also extremely busy.
Right.
Yeah, you know, maybe find a fucking babysitter.
Yeah.
One that doesn't want to murder or kidnap the baby, preferably.
But also, like, there's a something to be said for the fact that, like, you have literally tons of demons and whatnot who have been hunting down your baby, and now you've opened your doors, and now there are far too many people in your lobby, and the baby is there. That seems completely fucking moronic.
It's almost as if they took a trip to the Plot Hole Emporium. I'm making that up right now. Hey, welcome to the Plot Hole Emporium. Do you have this baby that's being hunted down by all of these fucking demons everywhere? Why don't you invite them all in? What could possibly go wrong? Keep on shopping for our babies, and we'll keep not oogling their mothers.
That was almost better in a certain kind of way.
Yeah.
Rather than having one written out.
Yeah, I haven't done anything super off the cuff for a while.
Yeah.
I said, why the fuck not? I realized I should have written a Plot Hole Emporium there, but I didn't.
Yeah.
You're not real. Or I'm not real. Somebody
up here isn't real, and I suspect it's you. So if you're not real, then that means that my head came off back there, and then I'm dead now. We cut to some office in some place where Angel meets with a businessman. They're doing the thing where he's like mid phone call when Angel comes in, and it's the kind of phone call where he's like jumping down someone's throat, basically.
You know who this fucking guy is?
Yes. Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Jeffrey Dean goddamn Morgan.
And I have things to say about that later.
Oh, yeah?
But I don't want to get into that yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, you may know him as Negan. I don't remember what his character's name was in
Supernatural.
Supernatural.
Yeah, I don't know either. Sam and Dean's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, he is such a good fucking actor.
He's a great actor. Yeah. I didn't even realize that it was him in this scene. I didn't realize it till later.
I realized it about halfway through this scene. Like when he was on the phone, he didn't look familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
The moment he stood up and was standing like face to face with Angel, that was the moment where I'm like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. I know him. Holy shit. It's Negan.
Yeah. Same thing happened to me that happened to me when I was watching Supernatural. I only started watching Supernatural because everybody was like, hey, Negan's in Supernatural. He plays their dad. Turns out he's only in like 3 episodes yeah. of 15 fucking seasons. Yeah. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Oh, my God damn. So, but I didn't even recognize him because he had so much more basically baby fat around his face. Right. He was just a little heavier, not like unhealthy heavy.
No. He's younger.
He lost a lot of weight in his older age yeah. as when he plays Negan.
But yeah, the 5 o'clock shadow he had was what made me go, oh, that guy looks familiar.
Mm.
But yeah, anyway, introduces himself as Harlan Elster. He wants to hire Angel to take out a nest of vampires downtown that are extorting the company for money. Specifically, they want $5,000. And Harlan here is about not letting them extort him and is willing to pay Angel $10,000 to go kill them instead.
Mm-hmm. All I could think of when he cuts Angel this $5,000 check, all I could think of was Wayne's World. I'm going to give you both a check for $5,000 each. And they're both just nodding their heads yes. aggressively as he punctuates each word. And then they run away at the end of the scene. We got $5,000. We got $5,000. And when I was a kid in the 90s, I was like, man, $5,000.
Dude,
I can't.
Today, $5,000 would still be like, holy fuck, I got $5,000.
It's not nothing, but it's not nearly what it was. That's right. Like saying $20,000 now.
Actually, it's basically how I feel this morning because today I found
you
out.
You basically got handed $16,000. Yeah.
Today I got my $16,000 of student loan debt forgiven. Because I am a poor broke ass and haven't been able to pay anything.
Thank
for
you,
a long,
Biden
long
Harris.
While.
I yeah. mean, fuck politics. Fuck both the Democratic and a Republican Party, but please vote Biden for the love of God.
Yeah. If for no other reason than the fact that they got rid of my student loan debt.
Yeah. If for no other reason.
Yeah.
And they might get rid of yours too.
Yeah. They just might. But anyway, I kind of like the attitude of this guy. And I kind of like that Angel doesn't pick up on what... Because his whole attitude is like, I'm going to pay you $10,000 to kill them because it's the principle of the thing. His attitude says, how dare they try to extort me?
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a pretty simple thing to latch onto. Angel's like, but that's twice as much as they want from you. And even I'm just... Before Jeffrey Dean Morgan even said anything, I'm like, yeah, but we don't fucking...
Right.
...deal with terrorists.
Exactly.
Okay. Like, I'm not, you let them extort you for $5,000 once, they're going to do it again.
Exactly.
They're just going to keep squeezing you.
Exactly.
Better to pay somebody $10,000 to take care of the problem.
Yeah.
Going to make you an offer you can't refuse.
But he writes a check for $5,000 and then says he'll get 5 more when the job is finished. Angel, happily with a big ass grin on his face, bolts out the door. I've got $5,000.
We got $5,000. Yeah. He's like, golly gee, mister. Thanks so much. I'm going to go buy me some gumballs.
After Angel leaves, another dude walks in the back door, says, what the fuck are you doing in my office?
The fuck? Who the fuck? The fuck are you doing? Who the fuck do you... The fuck? Who do you fuck? Who do I fuck? Who do you fuck?
That's
who do
none
we
of your
fuck?
Business.
Let's go fuck somebody. You, me. We're gonna.
I am not comfortable with this line.
I'm
of
not
questioning.
Fucking talking to you, Rex. Are you still here? I'm doing my thing over here. Do you mind?
I can tell. And I would prefer if you did that in a private space.
All right. I just I'm just gonna drill one out here real quick, and that's where baby formula comes from.
Jesus Christ!
Oh God! I'm highly inappropriate.
Anyway, yeah, this dude busts in the back door. Is like, who the fuck are you? What are you doing in my office? And
punches him in the face. Somebody punches somebody in the face. Pretty sure Negan punches the real Harlan Elster in the mouth. which that's a stupid name and I don't like it, and he deserves to be punched for that name.
Oh, the Elster?
Elster. Harlan, yeah. Elster.
It is an odd name.
Too many L's. Too many
There's
H.
only two.
Too many H's.
There's only one.
It's, I don't like how they used it. Elster.
From here, we cut back to Holtz's hideout, where Justine is still stuck to the table. She stuck around. I like that they use puns.
Did they actually say that?
Yeah.
Fuck me, well, sideways.
She tells him, I decided to stick around.
Decided to stick around. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's kind of a pun.
But you know what? He used a pun in the first scene.
Yeah.
She used a pun. It's cohesion. It's team cohesion.
These two were made for each other.
Yes.
They're so happy.
They're both angry. They both want to kill things.
Yeah.
And they want a pun.
And they need puns.
That's what a good relationship is built on.
Great.
That's what my upcoming marriage is built on.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Yes.
There are no Jacks in this relationship. Or dull boys.
Yes.
They're correct. Both very shiny girls.
Anyway, he tells Justine that he wants her to go recruit others that are just like them, that have been hurt, that are very angry and want to murder everything.
Yeah, the pain in their eyes might look a little something like this. Ching!
Yeah.
Pulls the awl out of her hand, and she's like, oh, like that.
Yeah.
That kind of pain.
I'm glad you illustrated that. I would have never known it otherwise.
Why didn't you lead with that? That's all I needed to know, man. Man. Jeez.
And then she stands up and punches him.
Like you do.
And you know what? I think he's happy that she punched him.
Yeah, I kind of got the impression that he respected that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he could have respected her if she didn't punch him in the mouth after that. Because that was a dick move.
Yeah, because the look he gives her after she punches him is this look of like, I really like your chutzpah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised he lets her live.
I mean, she did just pass his test.
But also there's that. So yeah, chutzpah. Good chutzpah. Thank you for the chutzpah. And so now we're back at
Hyperion.
Yeah, yeah. We're at the Hyperion lobby. Lorne comes in drunk on literal fire water.
Well, first, it's Angel is there. Cordy and Fred are with Connor. Angel's talking about how he's getting paid $10,000 to just kill out a vampire nest, then enter Lorne.
Yeah, and because he canonically can't get drunk on alcohol, there's this thing now that he can, there's fire water, it's a thing that actually gives him the symptoms of being drunk.
Yes.
So he brings them up to speed on Holtz because he was out talking to his people, his spies, his rats, if you will.
Yeah.
And it's nothing we didn't already know. The Nadras enter again.
Oh, sorry. Before there, I did want to point this out because it kind of hurt me deep in my soul. Before Lorne enters, there's a moment where Angel like looks over at Connor and like baby talks to him and is like, who's my magnum cum laude class or graduate from Notre Dame class of 2020?
Mm-hmm.
And like...
Yeah, do the math.
It's just like a stab in my chest and a twist of the knife of like, you're old.
Yeah, but also, even if this was, that the kid would be like 19. Who's graduating magna cum laude from Notre Dame?
Well, yeah.
Like right out of high school.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a little too ambitious there, Angel.
It's a bit ambitious. Yeah, it really should be 2024.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway.
Still made me feel very old.
That's all right. Deal with it. Get over it. So the Nadras are back now. They want Fred instead of Wesley. They offer up a measly $50,000.
$50,000.
Angel accepts enthusiastically like the poor broke bastard he is.
Hold on, though. He does ask Fred if she's cool with it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, he gets consent to accept the job.
That's fair.
It's not that like he's like, oh, well, I'm whoring Fred out.
Yeah.
Against your will.
Please cut off this girl's head and sew it on to your ancient master.
And the whole setup is that they tell them that Fred will go be there for a few days to solve the puzzle. And for that, they get 50K.
Yeah. And he's like, you know, make it clear, Lauren, that it's not going to be cheap. Like, per diem, salary,
yeah,
overtime, etc. And he's like, yeah, whatever. Oh, 50 grand. And then the shit-eating grin on his face when he takes the suitcase of money. I'm sure they were immediately like, ooh, I think we overbid.
Right?
I think we could have gotten it for less. Oh, well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't really care as much once we find out their true intentions.
Right, right.
But they looked so trustworthy, Rex. I never saw it coming. Not once.
With the sharp teeth and the, like, gaping mouth thing, yeah, going on.
The no lips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally trustworthy.
Jeez.
I was hoping for some demon fighting tonight, but I wound up with a delivery job instead.
If I come back here on the end of a spatula, I'm expecting some serious workman's comp.
I'm just messing with y'all.
From there, we go to Allison's house, where Wes and Gunn discuss with her case and discuss the status of what zombies are, kind of thing.
Well, they're talking about relationships first.
Yeah.
They end up gushing over Fred and kind of low-key arguing about who has more in common with her. And then Allie wants to know, what the fuck is up with her dead boyfriend? Like, what is...
That's what it is. I was just thinking, because... Sorry to interrupt you, actually. But when you were saying them gushing over Fred, it was going through my head of like, man, I just hate how they are this episode because they're doing that like speaking in unison bullshit and it's like drives me nuts and it's mm-hmm. just corny and stupid as hell and I hate it. And I just realized why I dislike it so much is because that's what the fucking Furies do with Angel. Oh, Angel. And that's what they're doing with Fred. And it's gross.
Yeah, a little bit.
Sorry.
That's all right. No, that's a good point. But yeah, Allie wants to know what the fuck is up with her dead boyfriend. Wesley offers a litany of possibilities. Well, there are any number of explanations. Witchcraft, black magic, voodoo, zombification, demon possession, even vampirism. You know, maybe they have unfinished business or some shit. And Gunn's like, or maybe he just wants to eat your intestines. And Wesley's like, Gunn, we don't know that he's a zombie, and besides, the flesh-eating is a myth. Zombies merely mangle, mutilate, and occasionally wear human flesh. So there is no reason to be frightened until we have a better idea. Bam! Crash! Boom! Zombie arm bashes through the window and grabs Wesley, or the door, or whatever.
Door.
Gunn beats it off, giggity. Okay, it's a zombie.
Yeah, it's a zombie.
That was a pseudo-quote of the day. It's the only reason I read everything, I guess. I don't know why I had to directly quote all that. Who cares? It's done. It's over.
Cut to moving on.
Cut to the ship where...
Yes, the boat.
The Nadras.
They're on a boat.
I'm on a boat. And they've got Lauren and Fred. They lead them into a room with a bunch of...
I love that Lauren is like, oh, I'm feeling seasick. Or I felt seasick when I was already on land. And mm-hmm. it's like the boat's really not agreeing with him. And he asks Fred, am I looking greener than usual?
And she's like, a little.
A little.
He's like, damn.
The Nadra greet them. They take their picture and they show this puzzle. It's like this kind of blue crystally chunks. And
yeah, not really shards, but they're right. Glass orb type pieces.
Well, and it looks like a big crystal
puzzle,
kind of a statue that got broken up kind of thing.
But in an orderly way.
Yes, in an orderly way.
Yeah. And it's got symbols, different types of symbols on each face. It's like oddly shaped dice, but they're big.
Right.
And Fred rattles off a bunch of nerdy shit that may or may not be sci-fi babble.
And I did not have the fucking spoons to look into that any further.
See, I wasn't sure if you would or not. I'm not too worried about it, though. It seemed pretty generic. And... the demons offer them some hors d'oeuvres that look like eyeballs and some sort of bugs on crackers.
No, they didn't look like eyeballs.
They were
eyeballs on crackers.
Sure, sure. And Lauren politely declines. You know,
yes.
He had eyeballs and insects for breakfast. So
I wonder if he actually did.
I'm not sure if he's joking or not.
Yeah, I don't know if he's joking.
Can't 100% tell. I mean, maybe
when you get into drinking fire water, it really kind of opens up your options for food.
I mean, the only reason I'm thinking that he is joking is because the last thing we know of that he ate was fire water. And before that, fucking baby formula.
Right.
So maybe he just doesn't eat very often.
Yeah.
And also, he probably just doesn't want to offend them.
Right.
Or make them put up a big kerfuffle because they're like, oh, we didn't get them the right food. We're bad hosts. You know, people would freak out. If you ever, like, were at a house party and said, I can't eat this. This.
Right.
My species is incapable of eating this. You know how people get. They make a whole thing out of beating themselves up over it. And it's like, okay, just shut up already.
Yeah.
So cut to the vampire nest.
Where Angel takes a look around. Apparently these vampires collect trophies and he thinks it's tacky.
Yeah, he's being a big snob about it. Like, I mean, remember when you were poor, Angel? Oh, wait, I guess he's kind of poor now.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Although he shouldn't be. We've had that conversation.
Really?
Too.
I mean, he did find a bag of money at the beginning of season two.
And they said nothing about what he did with that money.
Right.
I've assumed that's how he bought the hotel, but shouldn't he have money left over?
Well, they had a millionaire backer, and I think that went through, so he should still have the bag of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are they trying to get more money for Connor? Fucking plot holes, man.
Yeah. So... The Nadras, So, yeah, Angel's being kind of snobby. You know, it's like he can't even remember what it was like to be a young vampire without a soul.
Right.
Just eking his way through the world, just living blood check to blood check.
I think it would just be living victim to victim.
Well, sure, that's not as funny, though.
Yeah, fair.
So, and then one of these douchebags comes through the door, and Angel's like, hey, I'm going to kill you. And then he does.
I do get a fun line in the fight here. The vampire throws him and he lands on breaks the table.
Yeah, it's actually a fairly decent fight. Like he throws him against a wall at one point and he like kicks off of it. You got to have that stunt in there somewhere every fight at least once.
Angel lands on the broken table. Next time you hit the yard sales, I'd avoid the wooden furniture. I hear wicker's nice. Because he takes part of the broken table and
stabs him with a chair leg him. Or a table leg. Yes, it was a good one-liner.
Yep.
And then we cut back to Harlan Elster's office.
Two more enter, and then we cut away.
Oh, yeah. And one of them calls dibs on his coat.
Yes.
Then we cut back to Harlan Elster's office. Angel meets the real Harlan.
Yes.
And finds out that the other guy... Well, it was an employee that Harlan fired about 6 months ago because he kept asking him to fund his kooky scheme to clear out a vampire nest where they were guarding treasure.
Yeah, so Sam Ryan is his name, and Harlan points out that the check, in fact, is fake and no good.
Oops. See, I thought maybe Jeffrey Dean Morgan had, or Sam, his character in this is, I thought maybe he, part of the gambit of... posing as Harlan was that he could have forged one of this guy's actual checks.
Yeah.
And then Angel could have actually cashed it. And by the time they figured it out, the money would be gone.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened, I guess.
Nope, that's not what happened. But yeah, the last thing is Angel's like, he's ripped up the check. He's about to leave. Harlan's like, yeah, immortal beings living in a rat-infested building guarding their treasure. Right.
Wait. What's this about treasure?
And yeah, that's
treasure.
Yeah, that's Angel's response practically.
Uh huh. Yeah, his interest is piqued.
Yes.
And we cut back to the boat. It's way
back on the boat.
So much cutting back and forth in this one.
Oh God, yeah.
It gets a little obnoxious.
Well, it's basically four storylines all rolled into one.
Yeah. As soon as they start getting all those phone calls and everybody started taking different things, I was like, oh. This one's going to be a bitch to take notes on.
Oh, yeah.
So we're on a boat.
Fred working very hard on the puzzle. Lauren decides that he needs to go vomit in the bathroom.
He specifically says that he needs a vomitorium.
Yes.
Obviously meaning that he needs to go puke. But did you know that that word is actually a theatrical term for a small hallway leading outside?
Really?
Yes. We have two vomitoriums here right now.
Why?
It's just a hallway. And it's because it's they're generally designed in kind of a V shape to allow for large crowds of people to exit a building.
Okay.
So, and the word vomitus has origins, I believe. Please correct me. I'm probably very wrong on this. I want to say it has origins in Latin that mean to spew forth.
You know,
So when a show is over and a bunch of people are exiting through the vomitoriums, it's like the building is vomiting up a bunch of people. And Rex is checking my work. So don't give us a call at 269-743-0783. What are you looking up? Vomitorium?
Or vomitus. It basically means expelling contents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Man, that it's also Greek in origin.
Oh, Greek.
Yeah.
It's Greek and Latin?
Oh, shit, dude. The word goes all the way back to fucking Sanskrit.
Shit, son.
Vomitai.
Huh.
Damn. Vomit is an old fucking word. Because there's a Latin root, Greek root, Sanskrit, Old Norse root.
Learning a lot of etymology of puke today,
Lithuanian?
People. Oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
You heard it first here on Ale with Angel.
I find it fascinating when you find those words that, like, the word has lasted in pretty much an unchanged form for, like, so fucking long. A
couple of thousand years at least.
Yeah.
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 That's neat. So.
But to say it on the air, on the record, you're right.
Well done. Yeah, I was right. So, anyway, yeah. So Angel, or so Lorne is going down the hallway that is just unnecessarily creepy to get to the bathroom, and very poorly lit. And
yes.
I mean, they're on a boat, so
right.
I don't even know what to expect when in the lower decks
you're
of
on
a boat.
Just walk to the edge,
right? Just go puke in the water. But he overhears the Nadra telling their prince that they've found the perfect head to sit upon his shoulders, and it shall be sewn on this very night.
Yes.
And then Lorne gets whacked real hard in the back of the head by one of the Nadra with a stick of large proportion.
Yes.
Now, why couldn't he sense that when he was talking to them? Well, because they weren't singing.
Yeah.
Damn.
Also, maybe just in the translation and the fact that they don't use regular words or something like that. I could understand.
It's probably got something to do with it. Some kind of miscommunication or lost in translation.
But just a thought. Like, if you are in a situation where you want to remove the head of a subject and that subject has a friend, and that friend is like, hey, I need to use the bathroom. Wouldn't you maybe have them escorted so that they don't stumble upon your prince that you are showing pictures of the new head? Like, maybe not just trust that this person's going to flawlessly follow your directions on a boat.
Well, I mean, they're not human, but also maybe you should just keep that in mind for the next time that you are kidnapping somebody to cut their head off.
Okay.
All right.
I mean, yeah. That's...
Learn a lesson from their mistakes.
Good point. Next time I go about kidnapping someone to steal their head.
Yes.
Got it.
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm asking.
It's a
simple request, Rex.
I was doing so well at keeping a straight face, damn it.
So, but also, Lorne did, he's not as rusty as he thinks, because he did originally translate it as they want to buy your head.
Right?
And then corrected himself, or they corrected him when they realized that, oops, we said that a little too accurately.
Yeah.
And they're not into it. So
maybe it was just Lorne assuming they must have meant mind and not head.
Yeah. They could have thought, wow, we found some perfectly consenting victims. This is great.
Yeah.
That's the comedic premise of an episode of the IT Crowd, and it was great.
Yeah.
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 What's his name? Moss thinks that he's just meeting somebody from an ad in the newspaper to make a friend.
Right.
And he's coming over for dinner, but it turns out to be some weird German who's into cannibalism.
Yes.
And he's not coming over for dinner. He's coming over to be dinner. Yeah. And then after Moss learns this, he's like, oh, you meant you wanted to eat me. Can we watch the movie first? I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
We cut back to the Hyperion Hotel where Cordy is talking to Connor and trying to show him that she can float. She's unsuccessful at floating, which is unfortunate. Maybe she just needs to practice more.
Underachievers, I swear.
Get
your shit together.
I think I've hung out with you far too much for far too long, because when she's talking to Connor and she's talking about the powers that be, put a little demon in her. Yeah. Because that's exactly where my mind went.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, the end of the scene is she's like changing Connor, and then she looks down and is like, I just realized how weird your life will be. It's like, really? Really? You're just now picking up on that?
You think?
You think maybe being not born from a vampire is a bit weird?
Even just the actor child who's being raised by parents that are putting him in this television show.
Yeah.
That kid, the actual baby, is probably having a weird life. Yeah. Actually, there's somebody we should interview on this show. All three
of them.
It's
not like they'd remember it.
No.
They're babies.
That doesn't mean it wouldn't be fun to talk to them. Maybe it wouldn't be. I don't know.
Who knows?
Never know. Some people get their heads way up their asses. What are you going to do? But so far, you know, we've had good luck with our interviews.
Yeah.
Third time's a charm, though. So, yeah. Cordy's trying to float for the baby. She has a little chat with the baby that's all completely fluff. It's filler, and it catches us up on old plot points, like her demon side effects. Got back to the nest, where Angel catches Sam taking a watch off the pile of the shit in the nest. Sam apologizes for lying to Angel, but he was supposed to kill 7 vampires and not 3, because Angel's like, I agreed to $10,000 for 3 vampires, and he's like, 7. Okay, I'll take $7,000. No, you were supposed to kill 7 vampires. Oops! And so this guy's talking about, but this was the last thing that I bought, this was the first thing that I bought for him, and now he's dead, and I don't know, couldn't tell if he was talking about his dad.
I think it was just his best friend.
Yeah.
I don't get the idea that it's like a romantic partner.
It kind of made me wonder. I kind of wondered if there's
a couple of moments where it's like, is he?
Kind of wondered if that was where they were going with it.
But by the end of it, I don't get that feel. I think it's just his best friend.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would, you know, con a sold vampire out of some money to go kill 7 vampires if they killed you.
Yeah. Ditto. Thanks, bro.
Yeah. That's what friends are for.
Yeah. It was a nice moment. Either way.
I like the bit where Angel takes the watch from him and is like, oh, what is this? You know, like thinking it's worth money. And he's like, it's a Timex. Is this worth as much as $10,000? And Sam replies with, no, it's worth more.
Mm.
And it's like, it's a Timex. It's fucking a worthless watch.
It's worthless, but it means something to him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That was nice.
Yeah. Isn't that nice?
Well, isn't that special? So they hear clattering noises in the distance. Now that we know that there's 4 more vampires, now we can hear them.
Yes.
That is how vampire rules work,
yes,
it turns out. And
if you don't know they're there, you can't hear
them.
Can't
hear them.
No.
They'll just eat you, and you'll be like, I see it eating me, but I can't hear it.
Man, this is such a silent murder.
It's very bothersome. There should be sucking noises. Glurping, even.
Ugh. And maybe some, you know, licking.
You know, if you want to get dirty about
it.
And I do. So yeah, definitely some licking.
I can hold a note for a long time. Actually, I can hold a note forever. But eventually, that's just noise. It's the change we're listening for. The note coming after and the one after that. That's what makes it music.
So back at the Hyperion, Cordy's showing off all the money to the baby and then has a nice pleasant vision about Fred being murdered and mutters to herself impotently that Fred needs to not solve that puzzle.
I am grateful that they kept the dramatic music, the flashing images and whatnot, so that it's very obvious that she is having a vision, unlike the previous episode where she had a vision and she was just floating. And
she's like, oh no, the vision I'm having right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the punchline they needed for the moment.
Right. I'm just glad they didn't change it that much.
Well, sure. They still need to establish somehow that she's having a vision. And it is kind of a dramatic moment. Like, ooh, she's seeing something dramatic happening anyway.
Yeah. And then we get a very, very, very brief cut back to the boat where Fred says that she shouldn't be long now in putting the puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go back to Allison's.
We do, in fact, where Allie's getting impatient because she has plans tonight.
Yeah.
It's like, really? How'd you manage to make plans while you were busy
being stalked by a zombie?
Not sleeping because your dead boyfriend was stalking you.
Yeah.
Good on you. Man, priorities. I'm just saying. So, yeah, they're like, oh, sure, no problem. We'll just come back and take care of your little zombie boyfriend later. Okay, bye. No, actually, they're like, what do you want from us? We're here. We're barricading every entrance. Crash, boom, bang. Oh, except for the Kool-Aid Man entrance in the kitchen.
Yeah, the skylight.
Which
is the first of two skylights to be busted in this episode.
Indeed.
Yes.
And then the least zombie-like boyfriend, ex-boyfriend I've ever seen.
Right.
Comes running into the room. Like, he looks...
He doesn't even come running into the room. He just walks into the room and, like, starts to try and have a conversation.
He kind of stomps in.
Well, yeah. Really. I mean, he is a zombie. Like... You know, he's got kind of that Frankenstein's monster walk thing going.
Yeah, but he's a very stout zombie.
He is.
He's more of a Frankenstein than a zombie.
He looks a shocking amount like the zombie from that Buffy episode.
Yeah.
I think season one.
And that makes sense that they would canonically do that. Because I'm like, this doesn't feel anything like a Walking Dead zombie.
Right.
Like, he can still talk, for one. He can ambulate quite well.
That's a good word.
Yeah.
I like the word ambulate.
So, I guess that's just Buffy universe zombies. Is they're just a little bit green.
Yeah.
Other than that, no big deal. They just don't have a heartbeat or something.
Yeah.
They have a little bit of necrotized flesh. Get over it.
But yeah, as soon as he walks into the room, he barely gets a few words out before Wes and Gunn just start fucking wailing on him.
Oh, yeah.
They tell Allison to run into the bedroom, and then they bolt to another door.
Yeah, so they knock the boyfriend down, and they all run into the bedroom, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so back at the Hyperion, Cordy hangs up after not getting an answer from Wesley and Gunn. She grabs the baby and the briefcase full of money and fucks off to the marina to give the money back and explain that it was all a big mistake.
She does explain to Connor about how Angel doesn't know how to use his fucking cell phone properly.
Yeah, she makes a comment about him not being knowing how to check his voicemail, which has been a running gag for several episodes, if not like the whole show at this point.
Yeah,
I mean, they only started working cell phones in... I think in the
last season.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have one in the first season.
Relatively recently, because we've got so much content about saying, you know what could have solved this problem? A fucking cell phone. You know what actually existed at this time? Fucking cell phones.
Yeah.
And they're just starting to really incorporate those in the show. And so now we're back at Allie's house. Yes.
Yes.
After learning that Allie isn't dating Wesley and Gunn, the zombie boyfriend starts to pout. And
he calms down. He goes back into the other room. He just kind of sits there and pouts. She comes into the room and kind of berates him for pouting.
Mm.
And there's
this is so typical of you.
Yeah. There's this back and forth. And it turns out that he violated her privacy a couple of times by reading her diary. And for that, she poisoned him to death.
Fucking murdered him.
She murdered him. And we don't know how he became a zombie, but... He at least says that he would forgive her for killing him if she'd just give him another chance.
Yeah. And she's unsure about this because he was so needy and suffocating, but then decides perhaps maybe she was a little hasty and that she should, in fact, date this dead man.
Yeah, and he points out that, I've seen the guys you've been dating. You're not having any fun.
And you know what? That's important.
Yeah.
That is important. But after witnessing this disgusting display, okay, maybe not. No, I'm going to
say. Honestly, I think she's making a bad call here on the grounds that, like, if she doesn't like where this is going, she doesn't have the easy out of murder. She's going to have to face it and break up with him. It's going to be all emotional. It's going to be all teary-eyed.
Well, she won't be able to passively murder him again, that's for sure. Yeah. She'll have to fucking destroy his brain.
Yeah. Maybe shotgun in his sleep.
Yeah, but also, I mean, huge red flag, he's very jealous.
Yes.
He only calmed down once he learned that she wasn't dating these men.
Right.
It's like, you're dead and obviously broken up. She can date whoever and however many people she wants.
I actually kind of appreciate that they left completely out the part of like, wait, how is he a zombie though?
Right. Little bit of a...
I like that that's just never even... like
not even
no
important.
No one cares. No one cares.
It's not even a plot hole. It's just no information there.
Exactly.
Whatever. And so I love Wesley's response to after witnessing all of this. He's like, will that be credit or cash?
Yeah. Hey, they did their fucking job.
Yeah.
They protected her from the fucking zombie.
I'm glad they cut it off there because I was completely expecting her to be like, I hired you to kill him and he's still like, okay, maybe he's dead. But, you know, argue that they didn't do what she hired him to
do. No, it would not have been out of the ordinary for this show to continue the scene past this line, but it's much better that they left it there.
Yeah. Let's just assume she paid him
and
they left. And so we're back at the nest.
Back at the nest where Angel tells Sam over and over in a number of ways, I don't get paid, I don't fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Negan, Sam is actively trying to block the door from the four angry vampires while Angel is begrudgingly agreeing to help but refuses to actually do any killing.
Yeah.
He casually discusses payment while Sam is panicked for his life and explaining that, man, I got no job, I got no money, no assets, I got no way to pay you. I spent everything I had tracking these guys down. Quote of the day here. Angel says, I don't know what to tell you, Sam. I can't kill on deferment. It sets a precedent.
Yeah.
And just the ridiculousness of this conversation while they're both barricading a door.
I also wrote down that same line.
It was fantastic to me. It was a great moment.
Also, I liked the use of the word deferment.
Yeah,
it was excellent.
Yeah, it saved you on your student loan payments.
It sets a precedent.
It sets a precedent.
But it's also like, really, like, how's word about this going to get out exactly? Like, you know, who's it setting a precedent for? How many times have you saved people's lives without charging them, Angel?
Right? Yeah. Help the helpless, man.
Yeah.
Man. So we're back at the ship. Fred solves the puzzle and gets whisked away on a fabulous vacation from her head. Ever feel like you're all caught up in your head? Bad headspace? Boy, do we have the vacation for you. So they strap her in, giggity, and Lorne is all tied up on the floor, also giggity. And just in the time of old Saint Nick, Cordy pops in to save the day.
I did like how she's like, oh God, are they going to make him marry me? And quote of the day, Lauren says, in fact, no. And that's something we can be grateful for.
Let's look on the bright side.
Yeah. There you go, Lauren. Positivity. I love it.
Mm-hmm. So she tries to be diplomatic about it. Cordy does anyway. But Lauren fucks it all up. By assuming that Angel, Wesley, and Gunn were with her.
Right.
And tells them that they're surrounded by warriors or something. But
Lorne failed to understand rule number one of translating shit is you say straightforward translation what was said.
Yeah.
You don't fucking reword things. You just don't.
That's one thing that's really bothering me. I've been catching up on Discovery. Are you familiar? Have you been watching?
I have not watched Discovery. I tried to watch it. I don't really like the format that the show is designed in. It doesn't feel like Star Trek to me.
Sure. That's fair. This isn't a Star Trek podcast.
Right.
Except for when we make jokes about Odo and
yeah.
The Ferengi. Fucking... Quark.
So, I like just the Ferengi.
I mean, Quark really is the Ferengi.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, there's this character, Adira, who is the first in the Star Trek continuum, the first human ever to get a symbiont that is normally only ever compatible with Trills.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And so Adira has all of these memories of the past hosts. One of whom is her ex-boyfriend, because Adira took the symbiont from her dying boyfriend, who was a Trill.
Okay.
And so this character that is not able to be seen by any other character, Gray, is constantly, like, they all believe Adira,
right,
that they're talking, and also canonically non-binary.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Adira is. So... Adira's constantly talking to Gray, and everybody's like, oh, is that Gray? Cool, tell him I said hi. But constantly is not saying exactly what Gray told them to say.
Right.
And I'm like, fucking say what he said.
Yeah.
Do it.
Just straightforward translation. That's all, like, come on.
Yeah. If I were Gray, I'd be extremely pissed off at you right now.
Right. And Lauren, like, Cordy should be really pissed at Lauren because he fucked up the plan.
Completely.
She had a solid plan.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably wasn't going to work because they obviously didn't give a shit about the money.
But we'll never know
now. You'll never know.
It could have saved a lot of bloodshed, but probably not. I'm sure it's fine.
But yeah, another good line from Lauren in this scene. After a little bit of back and forth between Cordy and Lauren, Lauren says, sorry, I yield the floor to the person not tied up on it. And those two lines almost back to back from Lauren just cracked me up. I fucking love Lauren.
Yeah.
I'm so glad he's like becoming a regular character now. Mm-hmm.
It's nice to see him every episode.
Yes, it really is.
And it's nice that nobody's treating him like shit.
Exactly.
Specifically this episode.
No, he's very important this episode, actually.
Oh, yes.
So, there's still a place in this world for traditional research.
Even a solitary soldier such as myself recognizes that a free exchange of intelligence benefits the common struggle. Also, I brought in your mail and newspaper.
And so now we cut back to the nest.
Yes, back to the nest where Angel tries to get Sam out, but Sam specifically refuses to leave.
Yeah, Sam's like, nah, I'm going to stay and avenge my dead friend. It's cool. Like, and Angel's like, God damn it, I'm trying to save your ass. Ah, fucking hell. And he opens the door and he's casually killing off four other vampires.
He only kills three. One runs.
Oh, one runs.
Yep.
Well, he's casually killing vampires while laying into fucking Sam.
Yeah.
And is this a quote of the day for you?
No.
Okay, because it kind of is for me. As he's murdering vampires, I'm sorry, dusting, slaying, whatever.
Yes.
It's not really murder.
They're already dead.
It's a little bit murder because he's also a vampire.
No double jeopardy. They're already dead.
Yeah. Okay. he's like, you take a job in good faith. You expect to be compensated. You provide the best service you can offer. A quality service. But, you know, there's overhead. There's rent. There's three phone lines. Advertising. It adds up. Dust.
Yeah.
I thought it was another great moment.
Yeah.
And then he hucks the watch at Sam, and he fucks off as Sam is like, I owe you, you're a real champion. And Angel's like, yeah, whatever.
My favorite thing, though, is his phone makes a noise. He pulls his phone out and starts trying to talk into it. And as he leaves, Sam's like, I think that's your voicemail.
He's like, God damn it. Because he's got old man brain about technology. That they did that well this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Normally I'm just like, okay, I get it. He's old. Funny.
Yeah.
But they did it right this time. So we're back on the ship.
Cordy asks Lorne if they have groins. And, you know,
why ever would you ask?
Yeah, Cordy? Why would you ask that? And, you know, he thinks they do. And so she tests the theory and turns out they have armor there.
Yeah, they at the very least have metal jock straps.
Yeah.
Or they have iron penises.
Yes, one of the two. And either way, not good for the foot.
Not great for kicking, no. And it makes a loud clang noise. She falls backwards, falls through some curtains, and she's in pain, and is suddenly escorted back through the curtains by Wesley and Gunn, who do know how to use their voicemail.
Yes!
Hooray!
Hooray!
And they start kicking some ass and accidentally behead the prince by throwing the case of money at him.
Yep. There's a nice long pause after this has happened, and Gunn, thinking that, oh, it's done, this is, well, I guess you cut off the snake's head, and then the bad guys like turn and they're pissed off, and Wes is like, you pissed the other snakes off?
Exactly.
It's a good line.
It was. That was also one of my quotes of the day.
Yes.
It's nice to have a fair selection of quotes of the day.
Yes.
For a change.
More than one or two.
Mm-hmm. And luckily, Sam's dad was there to help Angel with his voicemail, because now he drops in from the ceiling with a shipment of Kool-Aid for all the kitties.
Ah.
And they kill off all the demons.
Yep, and there's two skylights down.
And they're a big-ass happy family. All those poor, poor skylights.
Yeah.
My heart goes out to the skylights. Everybody donate to your favorite skylight charity.
Yes.
And yes. Tell them Ale with Angel or Beer with Buffy sent you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
After the fight, Angel and Cordy have a moment where, you know, Angel points out that Cordy was right, and he kind of apologizes.
As he's staring at the spilled briefcase full of money.
He's trying to ignore it. He's just not doing a very good job.
Yeah, as it
lays. You gotta judge someone on their attempt and intent, not necessarily on whether or not they're successful.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, he did better than I would have.
Right.
I'd have immediately been like, so we're taking this money.
Yeah.
There's no way we're fucking leaving it here. By the way, money's not everything, everyone. As there's just money.
There's kind of a cringe moment when Wes and Gunn let Fred out of her shackles and whatnot. And she's like, I could kiss you both. And they both step up to her. Like
start
they're going
to move in.
Yeah. Like, ugh.
Yeah, it was a shtick.
And then Lauren's like, hey, still down here tied up, guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, for his shenanigans of fucking around with the translations, I think maybe he should leave him on the floor a little longer. Teach him a lesson.
Yeah, learn how to fucking translate, asshole.
I did like that when they're untying him, he's like, please, get this off fast. My hands are turning pink. I like that.
I get it. I get it, because he's already green.
Yeah.
So,
did you know that when you're looking at all the colors with light,
mm-hmm.
and you combine the whole spectrum of color, it is just not green. Like if you take all the colors available, mix them together, and remove green, you have pink.
Huh. But green is yellow and blue.
It's complicated, but trust me.
Okay.
Pink is not green.
I get what you're saying now, though, because you just happened to, you know, lead with the most confusing way to say, oh, do you think pink is not green?
I did that on purpose.
Weird. That's just, yeah. Thanks for that little bit of trivia. I'm going to hang on to that one. It's going to keep it right here in my breast pocket.
Okay.
For the next time it comes up.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's important.
So, Cordy's like, you know what? They tried to cut Fred's head off. We earned every penny. And they eagerly all start to pocket the money because that's capitalism, baby. But also, why the fuck wouldn't they just put it back in the briefcase?
Right. They earned the briefcase.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, we didn't pay for the briefcase. We should leave that. No, yeah. I didn't even consider that. That's funny.
No.
Also, I was thinking when they brought the briefcase full of money and Angel just takes the whole briefcase, I'm like, hey, they didn't
include
the briefcase in that deal.
I guess you
get
know,
a bag or something.
If you think about it, for the most part in TV, everyone always assumes they get the briefcase too.
Yeah, you gotta.
And that's just rude.
You gotta go buy another briefcase least. Every time yeah. that you do a shady deal.
Actually, I think maybe if you're going to be doing enough shady deals, you can just buy a bunch in bulk.
Is there
and just like keep up one closet with all your empty briefcases that are, you know, set aside for when you need to do a shady deal.
Yeah, I mean, is there some kind of briefcase subscription that you can get?
Nowadays there would be because there's a fucking subscription for everything.
Yeah. Every month you get one or two new. I mean, there's different levels, of course.
I was just bitching the other day about, remember when you could just buy software?
Yeah.
You just purchase it.
Everything's fucking
yeah.
some kind of shady ass fucking subscription plan yeah. now. I fucking hate it.
We're old.
No, shit just sucks now. There's a difference.
Well, I'm
sick of everybody I know is saying we're old. No, we're fucking not that fucking old. I'm sick of hearing it.
That's fair.
You get to say we're old when we're 70, all right? Stop dragging me down.
Excuse me, but I will start saying I'm old when I'm 60.
Fuck you. So, the Hyperion wrap up.
Cordy and Angel are putting the baby to sleep, laying kind of almost side by side.
They're
on
the bed together.
Yeah, they're in bed together. Well, Connor's there too.
Sure.
Cordy's feeding Connor a bottle. They're both half fallen asleep, talking about what they're going to do with the money. And
for not being a couple, they felt very coupley.
Oh, yeah. And you're getting a lot of moments where they feel very coupley. And I think it's completely on purpose.
Yeah.
But I like this because Cordy's like, okay, we get a college fund, we pay our bills, and put a down payment on a boat.
That's all I'm saying. We get a boat.
And then they have a little debate about, you know, a boat. And like, Angel's like, you know, what am I going to do on a boat? You know,
go out at night when you can't even see the water? Fuck yeah. that.
And then she says, okay. How about a college fund, pay our bills, and rent a ski condo in Aspen?
Deal. You know what? Yeah. Snow, trees, chipmunk robots on ice.
It does not seem safe to go skiing at night, though. It better be a fucking full moon.
I'm sure he has excellent night vision.
I mean, okay, sure. But you still, I think, would want a full moon in a clear sky.
Well, yeah, ideally. Oh, that would be
gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Night skiing on a mountain during a full moon in a clear sky would be amazingly beautiful now that I think about it. I think I want a ski condo in Aspen.
Couldn't agree more. Gerarg.
Gerarg.
Is this for me? I must be ready. I need my strength.
Give me more!
Nights, I shall walk in the earth.
Hold on. You've got something here.
Oh, yeah. And they fall asleep talking about chipmunk robots on ice.
Yeah, I already mentioned. So what? That's my first question, Rex. What the fuck is that about?
I actually looked into it.
You look that up, but not the technobabble.
Yes.
Go on.
No, I looked this up because I'm like, are they referencing something?
They had to have been.
And because of our age, it just felt like it would be odd that they would reference something like this and I wouldn't get it, you know?
Right.
So it was kind of like... That's what drew me to look it up. It's like, okay, is this actually a thing? Like, did I miss something? And no, you look up the phrase in quotes, chipmunk robot on ice, and you get like a few references to the fucking saber-toothed chipmunk in the movie Ice Age.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just posts and things about this fucking scene.
About people being like, so what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. And transcripts of the episode.
Yeah.
I imagine.
That's it. And that's fucking all you get.
I think it must just be a joke based on, you know, the kiddie shows in ice arenas. You know, you got Cinderella on ice,
yeah,
Dumbo maybe. On ice, all these stupid Disney shows on ice or whatever, and something like that. So chipmunk robots. So yeah. I think that means Chip and Dale on ice. Maybe they wanted to say Chip and Dale on ice, but they couldn't legally.
Copyright.
Yeah.
Ah.
Ah.
Gerarg.
We already Gerarged. I'm way past the Gerarg.
I didn't Gerarg.
Yes, you did.
Did I?
I have proof.
I mean, you would. We are recording this episode. I distinctly don't remember doing that.
We did, but then you tried to back up, and I was like, no, we're not backing up. We're just going to talk about it.
It's been a long week.
All right. So that being said, how'd you feel about this episode, Rex?
You know, I didn't hate it.
Yeah, I've had worse. It's starting to feel a little fluffy again.
Yeah. First off, there was some humor in it in a way that wasn't cringy humor. Mm-hmm. Like there was
cringy humor. But there was not cringy humor.
I'm actually kind of glad that they did these multiple storylines together, because I could imagine them doing them each as one individual episode and they would have been awful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not bad. I kind of liked it. I do have one major gripe, though.
Hmm.
And that is the impressively horrible miss opportunity with the Sam character. Because and I looked this up to make sure that this wasn't the case before I went on a whole fucking thing about it. But in this episode, Holtz specifically looks at Justine and says, I want you to find other people who've gone through the same kind of loss that we have and are just as angry.
She could have.
How much better would it have been if Angel literally was like, no, fuck you, Sam.
Yeah.
And then Sam got recruited.
Yeah. Except that wouldn't have worked because Jeffrey Dean Morgan is notoriously difficult to pin down as a recurring character.
But just the writing of that would have been cool.
That would have been. No, I love that plot point idea. Yeah.
And they just, Sam is exactly the sort of character that Justine needs to be recruiting.
You're absolutely right, except for he didn't really establish himself as much of a fighter.
Right, but, you can learn that.
Maybe.
Mainly, you need the...
But as long as we're fixing one plot point, exactly. Why don't we give him a fight or two while we're at it? Sure.
It would have been cool.
He's got the chutzpah to break into his old boss's office and fucking impersonate him.
Exactly. So, it was a missed opportunity, and it just kind of helps remind me again how many fucking throwaway characters they tend to do in these kind of shows, and, call back these characters and bring, you have all these resources of past characters you've had.
And not only
for
that,
singular episodes.
But just for this episode's sake, it would have made the Holtz plot feel a little tied into what's actually currently happening instead of being completely separate.
Yeah, exactly.
And that just would have been nice. It gives you a nice little fuzzy feeling.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking the warm fuzzy ending that they had in this.
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed that. But I think it would have been a great little bit of ending if, you have that classic fucking scene of, Sam's character's at a bar. Maybe he's all beaten up and shit and, in pain but drinking. And Justine saddles up to the bar next to him.
Yeah.
And then Gerarg. That would have been great.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
It would have been. But other than that, it feels a little fluffy, but it's not too much fluff yet.
Right.
Honestly, we need it pacing-wise because we did a lot of serious shit. Even last episode, even though it's a little separated from the season arc, was still a main character arc that we needed that was some serious stuff. And they're still getting other stuff done. I'm really curious what's going on with the baby. I'm just kind of getting tired. We've had two or three episodes in a row now of Angel being this overbearing dad figure. Yeah,
and I do think that's coming to a close.
And they keep flip-flopping the theme. It's like, oh, he starts off being really overprotective, and now he's worrying about money. Okay, so yeah, last episode didn't have much to do with the baby at all, did it?
No, for once.
Well, then I don't know what I'm bitching about then. It was an okay episode.
Yeah.
It had a few laughing...
It wasn't a slog. It actually went by quick. It wasn't one that it had major pacing problems.
Yeah.
We've had a few that were just fucking slogs. And this was definitely not that. In a way, that was one of the things that having the multiple storylines kind of helped.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think Angel has been failing to do that Buffy has done for a long time is you need a fucking B plot.
Mm.
You have an A plot and a B plot. This is all the way back into the fucking 80s. They wrote shows like this. You have an A plot and a B plot.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those two plots carries into the maybe the next episode. And that's how that's what serial TV is about.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, there hasn't been any B plot.
In Angel?
Yeah.
You're saying?
In okay. Angel. They just don't do B plot in their episodes. And it's like they did some here and there through season two and season one. But in this season, we haven't gotten much of that. While obviously we don't necessarily want a show that's formulaic, like when you step too far away from the fucking formula, it feels clunky and badly paced.
You can still be infinitely creative with formulas.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a slave to the formula, exactly. But you can still use elements of a formula to give yourself more of a frame
yeah.
of structure. But yeah, there were at least some laugh out loud points, which brings us to quotes of the day. Do you have a quote of the day?
I do have a quote of the day. And I think you're going to be mad at me because I think I'm going to accidentally take yours.
You usually do.
And that is, I don't know what to tell you, Sam. I can't kill on deferment. Sets a precedent.
Mm. That one probably was my favorite.
Yeah.
But I had options this episode.
Yes, for once.
So... All right, I'm going to give it to Wes. He goes on his big diatribe. Gunn, we don't know that he's a zombie, and besides, the flesh-eating is a myth. Zombies merely mangle, mutilate, and occasionally wear human flesh, so there's no reason to be frightened until we have a better idea. Rawr, rawr. All right, then, zombie.
Yeah.
There it is.
I want to give an honorable mention to they put a little demon in me. But also, I want to give you some of that credit.
Yeah.
That line probably would not nearly have been as funny if I didn't have you in my life,
wouldn't
Josh.
Wouldn't mean nearly as much to you if I hadn't given it the highly inappropriate meaning
exactly.
that you now apply to
exactly.
it. So you're welcome for that. All right. I believe this has, in fact, been another episode of Ale with Angel. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, or don't follow us on Twitter. And that's not even because they happen to have changed their name.
Also don't check it.
If you like, yeah, we don't check it. And if you like steaming shit shows of hell, then you're probably whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters anymore. So... you can still check us out at beerwithbuffy.com, but we don't really have anything for you to buy anymore. We can do special orders on request if there's anything that anybody would like to that would really need. We're still going to do a free hoodie once we get to 75 reviews. Don't forget to review us on iTunes. You have to leave a written review to qualify for the giveaway for the free hoodie.
Yep.
Check us out on patreon.com/beerwithbuffy if you want to support us financially. And if you ever have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at beerwithbuffy@gmail.com. Similarly, we have a phone number, 269-743-0783. You can text us or leave us a voicemail at that number. And last but not least, big shout out to JJ Treadway for all of our opening, closing, and transitional music. This has been Ale with Angel. I'm Josh.
I'm Rex. Have a good night. I will forever associate you with chicken noises.
And goose noises. Don't forget goose noises.
No, I'm sorry. Caitlin's got that one.
Fuck. Fuck right off.
You have a sacred birthright. You were chosen to destroy vampires, not to wave pom-poms at people.
Why can't you people just leave me alone?
You are the Slayer.
Go ahead. Pim.
I'm a watcher. I haven't the skill.
Oh, come on.
By appealing to your common sense,
What?
Wait, what have we done? Why are we watching this?